The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray, joined in the studio by Craig Burley and Pablo Zabaleta. We'll be with us in just a moment as we look ahead to the weekend in La Liga, where Real Madrid are taking on Alaves. Although they have been stumbling of late, they have not won in their last five in all competitions. And that, of course, includes that loss to PSG last time out. However, Carlo Ancelotti, the manager, is not shying away from the reality of the situation. Here's what he had to say in the pre-match presser about the criticism being justified. Carlo Ancelotti said, "We did badly against PSG. The first critic is me. Our approach to the game wasn't good and I have to take responsibility. I spoke to the president afterwards and to the board. They are hurting like us. We are very honest. We played very badly. The image of Real Madrid wasn't good and that is what hurts the most." Well, Pablo Zabaleta is in Madrid ahead of the next game for Real Madrid. Thanks for being with us, Pablo. Oh, you might be in someone's way there by the sounds of it. Pablo, tell us what you think about what Carlo Ancelotti had to say about the PSG game.
Well, we saw Carlo Ancelotti press conference this morning, and I think he was very honest. You know, he took full responsibility of that performance of Real Madrid against PSG. They know that they didn't play well. The performance of the whole team not been great. And obviously they will need to improve for the second leg. I mean, if they want to go through in the Champions League, they will need to play much better than what we saw against PSG this week.
You see them going through, Craig?
I think it's a problem. Particularly when you think about the players that are going to be missing. Casemiro, Ferland Mendy. Both are problems. If you watched Marcelo play against Villarreal, Chukwueze absolutely tore him apart in the first half. He just hasn't got the legs anymore, got all the experience. And you take Casemiro out of the midfield, he's just got that nous about plugging the holes and getting away with all the dark arts of the game. And then I think the biggest concern for me, and it starts this weekend in one of our live games, is does Carlo Ancelotti risk carrying Benzema this weekend? Because without him, as well as the other two, I think they've got no chance. And he didn't, and in no way am I blaming him for the performance, Benzema, but he didn't look fit. He looked worried about the hamstring. And there's, what, 2 to 3 weeks before the next game. What does he do this weekend against a team that are near the relegation zone? Do you take a risk with a hamstring that might keep him out for 2 months? Or do you go gingerly with it and tread carefully? I'm intrigued to see what Ancelotti's going to do.
What do you think about that, Pablo? Benzema, it's obviously a bit of a tricky situation because, as mentioned, they've not been doing so well without him, but he doesn't look 100% right now.
Absolutely. They've been out for a month, which is, every single player needs to be at their best, especially at this stage of the season where all the big games coming up, and Real Madrid needs the best of Benzema. I think it would be a risk for Ancelotti to play him tomorrow as a starter. Probably we see Gareth Bale playing as a number 9, or they would try to rotate and give some rest to the players. But also Real Madrid need the 3 points tomorrow. They only have 4 points gap with Seville, which is a top game for Real Madrid. They need to get the 3 points. The fans will expect from the team a good reaction and a good performance from the whole team.
There is that pressure to put on a good display though now, Craig, because even more so against the relegation side, they're missing one of their best players in the defence. Surely Real Madrid have to put what's happened behind them and get a good result here.
Particularly after the comments of Florentino Perez as well. Sort of off the cuff, not happy with the performance, all that sort of stuff. Not happy with, I had to laugh. You know, some of the directors unhappy with Carvajal's performance. You go and try and walk. you go down there and go one-on-one with Kylian Mbappe and get no help. See how easy that is. So, you know, some silly comments really coming out. They just didn't play well, but they haven't played brilliantly now for quite a bit, even going back to before the winter break. So it is important because Sevilla in particular are keeping some pressure on them. And clearly the guys that are going, I know Pablo said Gareth Bale, you've got Luka Jovic could play there. Good Lord, he could even use Eden Hazard as a false nine. He's used Isco in that position as well. So the options are not great, but I agree with Pablo. I think it's just too big a risk to take, particularly when he's carried the team for so long. If he plays against Alaves and you get the 3 points, fine, but the hamstring goes, then that's your European season pretty much over. And by the way, it's going to be even more difficult for them to win La Liga if they don't have Karim Benzema all the way through to the end of the season, because they just don't have a like-for-like replacement.
And they'll be hoping, come the end of the season, Pablo, that they can get Kylian Mbappe. And after that goal against them, weirdly, it's caused more excitement in Madrid. This is a player that we... Do you think it's put more pressure on the likes of Florentino Perez to bring in a player like this in the summer?
Well, listen, I saw today in the Spanish media, apparently PSG made a new offer to Mbappe of 25 million, a signing bonus, or 1.2 million per week to him to convince Mbappe to stay at the club. I don't know, something ridiculous. You know, this guy is flying at the moment. Every single team in the world would like to have Mbappe, but I think Florentino will splash the money. They know they need to bring him to Madrid, and will be a huge, huge signing for Real Madrid next season.
Does it matter about the money at this point? Well, wants to go to Madrid, he's just going to go anyway.
I don't know. Some of these players are just so super rich. I don't know how much the money then comes into it, you know, particularly if one's offering a big, huge amount and the other's offering maybe slightly less. But I'm intrigued when Pablo said, you know, 25 million a year. If I was in Kylian Mbappe, I'd say, that's only half what Lionel Messi's getting, allegedly. He's supposed to be getting £1 million. I don't know how true it is, £1 million a week. But I think ultimately we're probably going to see, I still think Mbappe's going to end up in Spain. Of course, PSG will try their best to convince him that this is the place to be, Paris is the place to be. But I get the feeling he's made his mind up, he wants to be the start of a new race at Real Madrid, and that could be with Erling Haaland as well, as a big if, but it could be. And a start of this new Galacticos going in there, and a full rebuild to try and be back in at the top of Europe again. So I personally think that's what's going to happen, Kay.
You mentioned it could be with Erling Haaland. Javier Tebas, the La Liga president, is very confident that they will get their hands, Real Madrid, on Mbappe and Haaland. And there are some reports saying that that will happen this summer, in his opinion. Could you see it happening, Pablo?
Why not? I mean, I'm sure that Florentino would do everything, you know, as possible to bring them both to Real Madrid. The ambition is there. The new stadium is nearly done. So that would be amazing to see in La Liga these two of the greatest players right now. I mean, think long term probably would be very clever, you know, for Real Madrid to have them in the team. Benzema is not getting any younger. He's 34 years old now. Haaland is only 21. So, and I think they can play both together. Why not? Maybe Benzema behind him, Haaland up front, making runs in behind. That would be amazing to see. Hopefully, finger crossed.
I'm intrigued, Pablo. Do you think Barcelona will have the financial clout, or will find the finances to try and go for somebody like Erling Haaland? Or do you think that's beyond them? And can they afford to sit back and potentially watch Real Madrid bring in the two hottest young talents on the planet?
Well, you know, I know Barcelona have been struggling financially, but I'm sure they have the money, or they will have the money in the summer to go for a player like Haaland. It would depend on the player, you know, where he would like to go and play for. I mean, maybe he knows that if he goes to Barcelona, he will play almost every game because they don't have, apart from Aubameyang or Ferran Torres, they don't have a proper number nine. But if it comes to Real Madrid, he will have Benzema, you know, two players to compete for one position. Or as I say before, maybe they can play together, why not? But some clubs in England, probably they will splash the money, they will go for him. So I don't know, we will see. But I think Real Madrid are in a better situation right now than Barcelona to afford a player like Haaland.
The first one is that we always talk about these players, and we all talk about Erling Haaland too, as if, and I know, and Pablo mentioned it, Karim Benzema's 34, he's not getting any younger, but he's not getting any worse. In fact, he's got better. You know, as long as he stays healthy and fit and sharp, he's playing as well as ever. So he's not going away. I mean, yeah, it's great to have two or three of them, but then you've got the problem of keeping everybody happy. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens because, you know, Karim Benzema has been carrying this team, so he's not going to just give that number nine slot up lightly. So there are a lot of factors, Kay, to come into it. But I just feel Spain is going to be the place to be for these young guys.
What a horrible problem to have, eh? Deciding who to play and where the
Real Madrid or Barcelona.
Barcelona are away at Valencia this weekend. We did see Barcelona in action against Napoli in the Europa League. And we saw the images of Ferran Torres crying after numerous missed chances in that game. He did score the penalty, one of the goals in the 1-1 game. What did you make of his reaction, Pablo?
Yeah, I know. Ferran Torres left in tears after the game. Listen, I don't support his crying. He's a professional player now. He needs to understand that. I know one of those days that he missed a few good chances, but hopefully he takes that as a motivation into the next game, you know. Sometimes, you know, strikers always live for scoring goals and all that, but he needs to understand that he's playing for Barcelona now, and he needs to be ruthless in front of the goal. Barcelona needs to win every game, so hopefully we see more from Ferran Torres in the next game. But he's been great. I have to say that since he's been at Barcelona, he's one of the best players. He's got a few good goals, and as I say before, you know, I expect from him going into the next game with the confidence that he needs to bring more goals to, you know, to Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good few chances that he did miss, Craig. Do you think he's feeling the pressure of being a big signing for Xavi's Barcelona?
I don't think there's any doubt there's a lot of pressure. You never know what's going on in a young man's life, but I'm with Pablo. It's a big boys game now, you know, at that level. And look, we've all played with some great strikers and they've all gone through barren spells. They've all, you know, missed chances. You know, like Viale and Ravinelli and Henrik Larsson and all these guys, I've seen them have, but you can't, it's not good to be shown a sign of weakness. Yeah, it's great to be passionate about it and you want to do well, but at the end of the day, there's always a pressure from big crowds, from your teammates and the expectations, and that's something that, you know, he had as a young man moving to Manchester City. Didn't get much game time, and now he kind of is this young big signing, Spanish international, let's not forget as well. And I understand he's upset, but you know, you're going to have to like hone your emotions, I would say.
Talking about home.
Trying to be nice.
No, I know. You guys have both been pretty nice there, but it's a good, strong opinion.
We could just say, for God's sake, don't bloody cry. But you know, it's tough. But at the end of the day, you got to harden yourself up for these moves. It's not always going to be an upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. There's going to be some bumps in the road in your performances, and there's going to be some whistles and boos from the crowd, and it's not every game's going to go your way. And it's how you handle that, particularly at a big, big club, is how you'll come out the other side.
Right, and that is one end of the pitch for Barcelona. At the other end, well, there were some defensive issues in that game against your Espanyol, Pablo. They're going to have to tighten those up against Valencia, aren't they?
I know. It was so painful when I saw Luke de Jong scoring that goal against Espanyol. It's been, I think, 16 years or something like that that Espanyol couldn't, you know, win against Barcelona. I play for Espanyol. I'm a big fan of them. But yeah, it was a good goal, great header at the end of last minute of the game, which gave them at least a point. But we have seen some improvement from Barcelona. They are now the top four. You know, this is something that they need to make that top four thinking next season to try to bring or to attract top players to rebuild the team. And I think Xavi is doing a good job at the moment.
And they're going to be without Gerard Piqué this weekend after his sending off last time out.
Yeah, that was a sort of little and large sort of showdown, wasn't it? And well, he reacted and a little nudge by Piqué, then a reaction, then the heads go together. And yeah, you just, I mean, nobody needs to tell him that he doesn't need to be getting involved because he's been there, seen it and done it. But both reacted and the referee sent him off. So yeah, it's something, another problem that Xavi has to deal with. But as Pablo said, they didn't quite, I mean, they had such an up after the Atleti game where it just felt, you know, and you and I watched it with Sid Lowe, it just felt so different. But then the Espanyol game was a little bit of a comeback down to earth, and that with obviously that late equaliser. And the Napoli game was chances created, you know, to win it, but didn't obviously create it, didn't convert. We've discussed that. Now let's see what kind of Barcelona side we're going to get in this game against Valencia, who have not been very consistent of late. So I still think the wheels are turning in the right direction, but just not as quick, I think, as Xavi would want.
Yeah, something really interesting at the moment is what's happening with Ousmane Dembele. In that game against Napoli, there were some whistles from the stand, and then, Pablo, it seemed that the fans changed their tune. Perhaps they do need him after all.
No, but that's great to see from a player coming into the game and yeah, the fans booing, but he didn't really care. He showed a lot of personality to say, I'm on the field now, I want to help the team to win tonight. I know he's in a very difficult situation, you know, going into his last year of his contract, a lot of speculation, Xavi trying to convince Dembele to stay at the club, but at least he showed, you know, some, you know, good skills on the field, and he needs to help the team to win games. You need to show that you are a good professional, even if at the end of the season he will leave the club. You know, be good, help the team to win games, and then, okay, whatever he does at the end of the season, good luck, you know.
And on the other side of it, for Xavi, surely it's the right thing to do to get the best out of this player while you do have him to help the team.
Oh, 100%. There's no point discarding this guy just because he didn't do what the club wanted in terms of the wage cut or taking a move. And also from the player's perspective as well. Clearly, everybody in Europe who may potentially be looking at him as a free transfer know he's a very talented individual. But they also know he's had some disciplinary problems. He has had some injury problems. And he's been very inconsistent in his performance. If he can even show a glimpse of that between now and end of the season, it clearly helps his team and his manager, but it helps himself. Because if he wants this big money, free transfer, huge wage that we believe he's after, he's still going to have to prove to a Chelsea or whoever it is that were reportedly interested in him that he's going to be worth this big salary. And that's part of, I think, what his mindset has to be between now and end of the season. I'll help you, but that'll also help me. We know I'm probably not going to stay, but you still need me because the squad is pretty threadbare. You've got Traore who's come in and he's proven himself to be inconsistent over the last couple of years. He was great against Atleti in his debut, but he's hot and cold. You've had young Gavi playing on the left-hand side. Aubameyang can play wide. But we know Dembele's a natural key in that position, and it would be foolhardy, I think, to just say, no, you didn't do it. So you're not playing between now and end of the season. And clearly that's not going to be the case because Xavi's not that stupid.
No. Well, the latest round of La Liga is already underway. We had some Friday night action between Elche and Rayo Vallecano. Rayo Vallecano not had the best run of late, desperate for a run after three straight losses in La Liga. And it didn't start too badly for them in the second half when Fran Garcia's cross was deflected up and over the keeper into the net to give them the lead.
Yeah, I was going to say, there we go. Looped off the defender and took all the pace off it, but got that nice looping spin.
This is Elche finding the leveler, though. Cross is headed off the post, and it's Guido Carrillo scoring on the rebound.
Really good follow-up. I think the initial chance comes off the chest. Well, I actually thought it came off the chest. He actually heads it. He should score. Doesn't. And very well followed in.
And Elche were to turn the game on its head. 80 here. And it's Ezequiel Ponce. He would make it 1. And the woes for Rayo continue. Losing out on the night on a game they really did need the points in. Lots more action coming up in La Liga this weekend. Real Madrid against Alaves on ABC. Dan Thomas will be joined by Craig Burley and Alejandro Moreno in the studio. We've got Alexis Nunes and Luis Garcia pitch side. Derek Ray and Steve McManaman will also be calling the game from the Bernabeu. Lots of action coming up this weekend in La Liga for you to be able to see. More La Liga content can be found on our YouTube page as well, so make sure you subscribe to keep up to date. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Man City will take on Tottenham Hotspur this weekend. Spurs coming into it after back-to-back defeats. Man City still riding high at the top of the Premier League as we now welcome in Nader Manua and Shaka Hislop. Nader, I want to start with you and ask you if Manchester City sent out a message this week that they are a different level to everybody else.
Not necessarily. Obviously, it was a fantastic result in the Champions League, but I think if it was against a side which more people fancied in terms of, you know, having a good chance of winning the tournament itself, then I think it would be. But I think, if anything, kind of just confirms to others that, yes, City are a good side. Obviously, they need a bit of luck with the draw, people being healthy and so on going forward. But I think a 5-0 away from home is great. But like I say, if it was against the PSG or something like that, I think it's a far different conversation than the fact it was against Sporting Lisbon.
Now, Pablo, how does Pep keep them on track right now? Obviously, things are going so great, but there is still a way to the finish line. How does he ensure that they stay like this all the way till the end of the season and win those trophies that they're in for?
Well, Pep is one of the greatest managers. I mean, what he's doing for the club is simply amazing. I think he took the club to another level. Manchester City are a joy to watch at the moment. They're playing beautiful football, but you know, still a long way to go until the end of the season. I mean, hopefully they can continue playing in that way. When you look at the whole squad, you know, every single player in a great form. I can't believe Bernardo Silva wanted to leave, last summer, and now he's one of the best players for that team. But hopefully, and finger crossed, you know, that is the year, the season where Manchester City can reach the Champions League final again and hopefully win it.
Think they can win it this season, the Champions League, Man City, Craig?
I think they can win it every year they go into it. At the moment, it's just, for whatever reason, it hasn't happened. Last year was a big talking point, his team selection for the final, with no what you would call natural holding midfield player. He changed it up. But anyway, back to the day job. I'm not taking anything away from the manager, not at all, because I agree with everything the boys have said. Magnificent coach. But to your question, when you said, how does he keep them going? It seems to me that these players push themselves, want to push themselves to the next level. And that's a great commodity to have. The fact that they just want to keep getting better, keep putting the foot down to the pedal. And yeah, they need a little bit of push from a manager and a coach and all the people behind the scenes. But it's a great trait to have, and it's going to be... I don't see any reason why this weekend will be a different story to recently, because their form at the moment is better than anybody else's in Europe.
Well, let's talk about managers. On the other side, we've got Antonio Conte. He's caused something of a stir with an interview with Sky Italia. That seems to be a bit of a running theme, doesn't it? Interview with Sky Italia. Basically, he says it wasn't translated well, but among his quotes was this: I certainly never expected that in January, four players who I still considered important would change their shirts for 1,000 reasons. This shows the difficulty. Xhaka, what do you make of what Conte's saying here?
I make absolutely nothing of it. I think that's Antonio Conte being Antonio Conte. The fact remains the four players that left didn't feature very often for Antonio Conte. He brought in two players that he clearly wanted, and you have to believe that they're both his signings, Brendan Kahn and Kulusevski. So the complaint that there was four out and only two in rings desperately hollow. But you've seen this from Antonio Conte, wherever he's been, he's made waves and ultimately gotten his way and delivered titles. But he always seems to make waves first, and that's all he's doing at Spurs right now.
Say those players are. I mean, that's taking any credibility out of any, you know, you're talking about translation from Sky Italia. That's taking any credibility away when you're coming out and saying, I lost four important players. Because as Xhaka said, no, you didn't. You lost four bodies. These guys were not, you know, equal to what he was trying to do. Allegedly, according to reports from one or two media outlets in the UK, told to stop giving interviews to Italian newspapers and outlets. And he himself apparently has complained that the media, whether that's Italian or whether that's the British media or English, are trying to paint him in a very bad light. The only thing painting him in a bad light at the moment is his team's performances, right? And the one thing we expected with Antonio Conte when he came in, and we got it slightly at the start, was he's going to make a difference to the existing player pool. He's going to make them tougher to beat. They're going to be working harder, they're going to be fitter, they're going to be sharper, they're going to be more aggressive. Everything you thought Antonio Conte's teams were going to be. We saw it against Liverpool in London a little bit, and since then, they've been battered by Chelsea, they beat Brighton but were outplayed for long periods. Southampton wiped the floor with them in terms of a performance. It was close in terms of scoreline, but in terms of a performance, Southampton outplayed them. And then Wolves, under Bruno Lage, have been excellent, controlled them, right? That's nothing to do with those four players leaving. He has to sort this out and sort it out quickly. And this is the last place he wanted to go this weekend. But spare me all these excuses. He knew, Kay, what he was coming into. Otherwise, he's not right in the head. If he didn't know what he was coming into, he wants his head looking up.
Nadim, can you see Antonio Conte sticking around after this season?
It doesn't feel like that at the moment, but you know, you just don't know, do you? They might go on a good run, maybe they'll finish fourth and there'll be a sense of positivity around the place. But I think the fact that he's complaining about certain issues already, it isn't a very good sign. And Spurs, it's not like they're known for buying tons of players for huge amounts of money every transfer window. So in terms of a manager and a perfect fit for a club, because as Conte said in his interview, I think he kind of wants the quick results, but the club's identity doesn't really belong to that because they want to develop players. So it seems like there's a bit of a mismatch there from the get-go. But again, it's interesting. As Craig said, it's Spurs. It's Conte coming to Spurs in November. Are they really going to be a different club to the one which he potentially turned down in July? I don't think so. So it's a very, very strange position for them to be in at the moment, I think.
Just before we go to the boys quickly, he also said earlier in the week that Tottenham are obviously a club that are just buying for the future and the two players that they brought in. Now, I'll give you Kulusevski, he's only 21, right? But he's played 20 times for Sweden. But Bentancur's 24. Now, in these days, we don't call a 24-year-old a youngster, particularly not one who's played almost 50 times for Uruguay. Now, we can argue about whether Bentancur is the answer or whether he was playing well at Juventus or all that, but he's a hugely experienced player in the prime of his career. Between the age of sort of 24, 25 and 30, you're hugely experienced, you're in the prime, you're coming in from Juventus, and he's talking about, well, these players, they've just been bought for the future. They're not for the here and now. But it's just gobbledygook. Nonsense.
Nonsense. More Premier
League. Can I fix my thing now?
Yeah, he's going to fix his mic pack. But more Premier League action coming up this week in the form of West Ham at home against Newcastle. Pablo, is this a must-win for West Ham if they are to stay in the top four? Can they do it?
Well, I think if they believe in themselves, why not? They have proven the first half of the season they have a strong team. They can beat any team in the league. And hopefully they can keep those players like Lanzini, Michael Antonio, Declan Rice, those players fit until the end of the season. Jarrod Bowen being absolutely, wonderful player for West Ham, scoring goals. So it's going to be difficult because sometimes the experience that you need for those moments will be huge for them. They have also Manchester United, Arsenal, Spurs, but I wish them all the best. I will be so happy to see the Hammers playing Champions League football for the first time in history. And David Moyes, I have to say, been great for West Ham.
Yeah, well, I wanted to talk to you actually about what's happening at Newcastle, because obviously the new owners have come in and things are turning around. Can you see in a few years' time perhaps a team like Newcastle now with this backing up in the top four, and any resemblance to what happened at Man City when the new owners came in?
Well, it was not that easy when the new owners came into the club at Man City. It took like 2-3 years to build a strong team, to have big names, to fight for trophies and to qualify for the Champions League. To be successful, you don't only need big names. You also need to create the right mentality, a winning mentality to fight with the best teams in the league. And I also believe that the quality of the team these days in the Premier League is so much better than years ago when the owners came in 2008 and they bought the club. So, but obviously the money is there. If they stay in the league, they will splash the money and they will go for big names, big players. But it will take a few years for them to make a stronger squad and to play in the Champions League, maybe.
Yeah, time will tell. Hey, we're actually calling this game West Ham against Newcastle the Shaka Hislop Derby.
Why is that?
Because Shaka. What are you going with? Who are you going for? You can't say a draw.
Yeah, 50 yeah. Man. Look.
I can't say draw. Okay, I have to admit, draw was my first answer. Given Newcastle's form and West Ham just a little bit inconsistent right now. But if I had to pick a winner here, I would still go West Ham. Newcastle have won what three on the spin, but they still are, I think, second worst in the league in terms of to points picked up on the road. And you started this by asking if this was a must-win for West Ham to finish top four. I don't think it's an absolute must-win, but I just feel that West Ham have a lot to prove to themselves. And despite Newcastle's position, they are a decent team. And without one of their main difference makers in Kieran Trippier, who's out injured, you have to, if you are West Ham and you really are serious about finishing top four, this is a game that you have to win. Because of Newcastle's position, but then because of their form, it also gives you a huge psychological boost in doing so.
So that's West Ham.
They came back for a very good point at Leicester. They didn't play brilliantly. Aaron Creswell in particular, the left back, had a bad day at the office, gave a silly penalty away with the arm out and then got caught at the back post and for the cross that came in, poor marking. But Craig Dawson bailed him out. They also lost Kurt Zouma in the warm-up and Diop came in. So they've got some replacements in there. But I think, as Pablo was saying, they need the key guys to still be playing well. The two centre-halves in particular, they need to do the basics correct. Declan Rice, every time you see him play, seems to be an 8 out of 10. He's so efficient with the ball. And if Jarrod Bowen can keep popping the goals in and creating, and then Mikel Antonio stays fit, I think they've got a chance, because there's nobody else putting their hand up at the moment and saying, I'm head and shoulders above you. Man United have been struggling. Tottenham have been awful recently. I suppose Arsenal have been decent, but why wouldn't you think West Ham, unless they get a barrage of injuries? I think if they get two or three injuries to key players, I just don't think they're going to have the squad depth to keep the consistency going. But if they don't, I think if I was David Moyes, I would say just keep believing.
Yeah, and Pablo Zabaleta, that'll be good news for you. Also good news for you, Pablo, is we're letting you go.
Oh, the pubs are still open.
It's Madrid, a 24-hour city. We'll let you go and enjoy the joys of Madrid by night. Thanks so much for being with us, Pablo.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Everybody by my cover going to the pub.
Craig, Nadim and Shaka will all be back for Extra Time. You can keep up to date with everything that happens on Extra Time by subscribing to our YouTube channel. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Ralf Rangnick has had to respond to the reports about Cristiano Ronaldo and Harry Maguire fighting over the captaincy at Manchester United. He said, to start with, I must say this is absolute nonsense. I've never spoken with any player about a possible change of captaincy. Harry is fully aware of that, and so is Cristiano, as are all the other players. This has never been an issue for me. It's me who decides who's captain, and therefore there is no reason for me to talk about this with any other person. This is Ralf Rangnick having to deny reports again. It feels like here we go again, Craig.
Yeah, but if what he says is true, you know, I've never known of a player coming into the dressing room and saying, oh, I fancy giving this captaincy to somebody else today. Do you want it? You know, it's like the end of the day, the manager, unless somebody else has experienced it, because I've never, a manager decides who the captain of his football club is at any given time. And if he wants to make a change to that, then he pulls the captain in and tells him he's making a change, and that's it and all about it. And you can throw a straw up or do whatever you want. But it's Rangnick, it was Solskjaer before him, it was Ferguson and all the managers before that. They decide who wears the armband. Not, in my experience, not the players in the dressing room.
And I mean, it's these reports, though.
I know. It's not. Yeah, it's more these silly, you know, he's got enough on his plate.
Right.
Trying to get this team operational to a certain extent without having to deal with, oh, the players are telling me, go to the press conference, oh, the players are saying your training's not very good. Oh, the players are saying you're training them too long. Oh, the players are saying the tactics. The players are now saying, I mean, he just doesn't need that on top of everything else.
Nathan, what do you make of these persistent reports of unrest in the Manchester United dressing room?
I think it's crazy, to be honest, because as far as the person that's leaking information goes, I don't see what the benefit is, because the players are already not in a good light, the club's not in a good light, the manager's not in a good light. So realistically, it's incredibly destructive. And whether or not it's true or it's false, because it's Man United, it has to be covered anyway. And with this particular one, I thought about this earlier, and the unhappiness that could potentially exist at the football club, I think in some ways it's justified, because the talent that they have and the club that they are, to be 20 points off top of the league, I'd be concerned if all the players are happy with each other anyway. And I think that, for me, is as a consequence of the results as opposed to vice versa. And these reports, like I say, I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know who they're designed to benefit. And in some ways, I do feel sorry for Rangnick, because it's almost like he can't ignore them. And it seems to be a new one every single week. But I suppose in some ways this is sort of the dysfunction of what Manchester United Football Club is at this moment. And it's certainly not what it used to be, say, just 10, 15 years ago.
That we can agree or disagree on his management and the way they've played. Everybody has an opinion on that, that's fine. But there is no doubt there is some person or people at this football club hell-bent on undermining his tenure, whether it be short-term, long-term, or whatever. There is, as Nedim said, it's coming from somewhere, either an individual or multiple people, and it just seems that they're hell-bent on undermining him as a person and as a coach, and just trying to make his job even more difficult than it already is. And I just hope for them to get to the bottom of who it is and they can get them out, or at least away from the place, until they can get the ship pointing in the right direction, because he just doesn't need it every week.
Now, do you think as well, Shaka, that this could be affecting their performances on the pitch and consequently their options to finish in the top four?
I don't think rumours are having an impact. First of all, I just don't believe them. And this is me looking in very much from the outside. United's and Ranić's problems are simple, in my opinion. Ranić is interim. Ranić is there till the end of the season. And that brings its own set of issues. Players have no idea who's going to be in charge next season, whether they're going to fit, whether they're going to be regarded as surplus requirements. And that's a difficult balancing act for players because, you know, how much respect do we show this guy? What are our positions in a few months' time? That's the core of United's issues. But as Nathan points out, we are talking about Manchester United. And as a result, everything you see, every rumour that you throw out there is going to get mileage, especially now in this social media era. So everything is coming out. People are throwing anything out in an effort to get media clicks or lines in any tabloid newspaper. And I don't think any of them are that believable. And ultimately, the rumours, I mean, Ronaldo wanting the captain's armband, I don't believe it. I don't think it affects the team in any way. This is just par for the course for Manchester United. The players surely understand that. The issue comes down to one thing and one thing only, and that is who's going to be the next Manchester United manager.
Yeah, well, we'll get to see Manchester United in action this weekend. Premier League is back on the calendar for the weekend, and Rangnick's men will be away to Leeds on Sunday.
Sunday.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
US women's national team taking on the Czech Republic in the She Believes Cup. We're taking it to the second half where we see Rose Lavelle with a great run, but a shot would be saved by the keeper.
Yeah, I suppose they'd gone for that far corner, but the angle was just against it. Bit of play.
It wasn't long again. Fell back on the ball, but once again, denied.
Again, it's all about the ball in behind, which was nicely weighted. Just the angle was, again, tight.
Yeah. Trinity Rodman would get a chance on her international debut. Free header there, but saved. 0-0, it finished. A hard-fought draw to set things off for the US in the She Believes Cup. Iceland top of the standings right now as we welcome in Julie Foudy to talk more about everything that we saw in this game. Lots of new faces for us to take a look at, and the coach too, Julie. So what did we learn?
Oh gosh, Kay. Well, what we learned is that, you know, the new faces, although they had moments, and there is a ton of creativity in this young blood and fresh legs, that they still need time to grow. And so one of the things you heard Vlatko Andonovski saying after the game is, no, the chemistry's not there, and no, they're not fully to the level they should be at, but we all need to have patience. The problem is, of course, that World Cup qualifiers and it doubles as Olympic qualifiers are in 5 months, which is why he's doing this drastic change to the younger generation. He needs to see them. But you did see flashes, and you have to give a lot of credit to the Czech Republic, in particular their goalkeeper, because they played him tight and they played him tough.
We mentioned that it was the international debut for Trinity Rodman. How did she do?
I actually thought Trinity Rodman looked good. This is a 19-year-old who didn't go to college. She decided to go play professionally with the Washington Spirit, wins a title with them in her first year, wins Rookie of the Year, has all these accolades. So there's a lot of eyeballs and pressure on her. And honestly, on her first touch, a great ball in from Christy Mewis, I think it's what you showed in the highlight there. I couldn't see it on my return. She gets called offside, but has a great look on goal. And so this is a player, even at 19 years old, that I think is going to have a ton of upside and excitement about. And I thought she did very well in her debut.
Great to know. Next up, New Zealand, who lost to Iceland. How do you see this one going for the U.S.?
I think actually this is a bit easier game. I think Czech Republic was playing in a low block, which the U.S. has a hard time in the last few years of breaking down. So I think they actually match up better against New Zealand. I don't think they're as strong as the Czech Republic. It's a country that gets to co-host the World Cup in 2023, but they don't have a ton of competition around them. So they've been also living through a very hardcore shutdown of COVID for the last 2 years. They have hardly played as a team outside of the Olympics. They came into the Olympics actually having not played together for a year. So this is a team that wants some time. It doesn't have the cohesion and I think the bite that Czech Republic does. But it'll be a good test for this young group again. And I think you're going to see some flashes and hopefully more flashes of the creativity of this young group in this next game.
Let's talk a little bit more about what we are going to see, Julie. As you mentioned, some of the veteran players left out here while Andonovski takes a look at some of these younger faces. We are going to see them back, aren't we?
Yes. I think there was a collective panic when there was no veterans named to this roster. Like, wait, is he going cold turkey straight to the younger generation? No, he's not. But I think the challenge for Vlatko Andonovski is because of COVID and the delayed Olympics, he doesn't have as long a runway to try these youngsters out. And so he's made this switch for this month and this tournament. But absolutely, there will be a mix of experienced veterans, star players mixed in with the young. It's just he's feeling the crunch with the delayed Olympics to actually get a look and get some time and experience with those youngsters in there. But yes, you will see maybe not all of them, but you will see some of the big names back playing with the national team in April.
But for now, you can take a look at some of the younger names, the She Believes Cup on ESPN. You'll be able to see it on ABC. It's the USA against New Zealand on Sunday in what is a round-robin event.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Thanks so much for being with us. Stick around. The guys will be answering your questions on Extra Time. We'll be back tomorrow too. Mission Extra Time. We have Craig, Nadim and Shaka here with us.
Yep, Nadim. Shaq, come on.
Yeah, Shaq.
Attention.
Get with the picture. Get with the program, Shaka.
I was going to send in a tweet. I was going to ask my own question.
Was it about your dress sense?
Did Nedim say vice versa during the show?
Was that your question for Extra Time?
Yeah.
What if he did?
Important. I'd just like to know how he pronounced it.
Vice versa.
What did you say?
Vice versa. Vice versa. Vice versa.
Vice versa.
Right.
That's close enough. Versa. I get hammered. Dan, I say vice versa, and Dan hammers me for it.
No, I don't think it's for much, Nick.
Hang on now, is it?
It's for that.
I thought it was just vice versa.
Well, that's how it's come, but if you actually look at the word, it's probably Latin, right?
Listen, none of us, there's four of us
yes.
on camera.
Yes, it is.
There's four of us on camera and not one of us is a commentator. only commentators.
I want to okay, finish your thought. It's Latin, only, so how is it pronounced?
Shaq, sorry, this is not Derek Rayland. You know, this is a commentator's dream.
This is important to me,
that,
Craig.
Between that,
this
train spotting, taking pictures of trains, hopping around wearing an anorak.
This is important stuff.
Pronunciation. It's commentators.
I don't speak Latin. But my Italian's not bad, and if it is from Latin, maybe it's something like viceversa.
I was learning Spanish in the car the other day.
Oh.
Well, it was on the way in, so it was only 20 minutes.
What did you learn?
Yes.
What?
I learned how you turn around the nouns.
Okay.
From the start of the word
okay.
to the end of the word.
I understand what you're saying.
So. Yeah.
Like I show.
Moral would be morale.
Oh, okay.
So turn that round.
And there you go. So now, next time you've got a question, Shaq, don't worry about Derek Ray, just call Craig.
S. I've learned that S
yeah,
is S.
Yeah. Speaking of train spotters.
I did all right in this time.
Anyway, I'm thinking about doing it. I'm thinking about taking the plunge, Shaq, and learning Spanish.
Craig is all in on La Liga this season. He's even learning Spanish.
No, I was going to do it years ago, but I never got. Shaq was going to try it, and he dumped it as well.
Vale la pena.
Yeah, I started
it's
that
worth it.
Field.
Well, the only Spanish words I know up to now are Dos San Miguel, por favor.
Well, that's where you're going wrong because there are better brands of cerveza out there. Anyway, let's get to some of your questions, shall we? For Craig, can Conte and Daniel Levy coexist even with the presence of Fabio Paratici? How long can you see this partnership lasting?
About as long as all the boys it would last. When this name was touted around, before he was even secured in the job, we all said, well, we understand why Tottenham would go for Conte, or go for a manager of, you know, that quality. But why would he go into a club that has been renowned for years for being very strict with their budget and managing a tight ship, particularly the ownership of Joe Lewis and the stewardship of Daniel Levy. So I don't see how, and of course the rhetoric in the last 7 days or so isn't good. So, and if they get a pasting at Man City at the weekend, things are not going to go away. So I don't see it lasting at the moment. I don't know how long it's going to last, maybe the summer.
We should take bets here on FC.
Maybe not even the summer, I don't know.
We'll see.
Just don't
Shaka,
know.
What signing should Man United make in the summer?
What sign? That's a very good question. I think United need a very good defensive midfielder. Declan Rice, of course, has been bandied about, though David Moyes is trying to put everybody off in terms of price. And I think they need a true out-and-out number nine. Erling Haaland fits that bill. Whether they are even in Team Haaland's thinking is I don't know, but if we say two signings, those are the two I'd go for in an ideal world.
Okay, next question for you, Nadim. Best defender right now in the top three, Van Dijk, Diaz or Thiago Silva?
I would go Van Dijk, Diaz and Thiago Silva. I do it in that order because I've seen Van Dijk play recently, and there was a point where I think Lautaro Martinez had him 1v1 in midweek in the Champions League, and he was almost scared to run at him. So I thought, well, that's kind of making him, he's got that sort of all around him at the minute. And for Diaz, I think defends very, very well. And the thing that those two have over Thiago Silva is the fact they're a lot younger. So for me, that's the way I do it. That's the 1-2-3.
Who has been the worst summer signing so far, Craig? Messi, Ronaldo, Grealish or Lukaku? You have to rank them.
Holy smokes.
Thought I'd give you an easy one.
So, Messi was a free, if there is such a thing, with huge salary. Ronaldo's scored goals. It's not Ronaldo, because he has scored goals, although he had a blemish up until the Brighton game. Grealish hasn't done a lot. Lukaku gave that interview and he's just gone off the boil. Don't know. Do I need to answer?
Yeah.
Okay. As I'm really making friends with Chelsea at the moment, I'll say I'll go Lukaku, Grealish, Messi, Ronaldo. Mm,
all right.
Lukaku and Grealish being
the one.
And then Messi, not the Messi as we know.
I don't think you're in for a quiet weekend again.
I'm not mentioning the Club World Cup.
You didn't. You forgot that there.
I'm not mentioning it. I just.
Maybe you would have changed your mind.
These are all great players. It's just, you know, I don't.
All right, it was a tough question.
They're all great players. They're all very good players. They're not all great players.
Nadim, with your promising future in track, there must have been very few strikers who gave you problems with pace. Who were the quickest strikers you ever faced?
The quickest striker was Thierry Henry. I remember there was a point where I was actually playing right back. It was at Highbury and the ball got played down the channel. I thought I was just dealing with it because I had Pires. Before you know it, you just see this guy come whizzing down the sidelines and before you know it, I'm 1v1 with Henry in the corner again. And it was truly terrifying at the age of 18. But I think he was probably the quickest, and you know, we can all think of highlights when he's run exceptionally fast, especially that one against Jamie Carragher at Anfield, where he basically ran off the field to get round him. So yeah, I'd probably say him, but there are a few others, but he's definitely the one which, you know, you have to give a lot of credit to from the get-go, and you have to try and play him differently, because otherwise you'll just get beaten.
Yeah, there's no point chasing him. Did you ever play against, Nadim, I don't know if this was a crossover of ages for you, did you ever play against Craig Bellamy?
Yeah, he was on my team as well, Yeah, Bella's really fast.
He's fast.
So I played Rio Ferdinand as well. But one of my biggest memories of Rio, just before he left United, was when Craig Bellamy had him basically swimming, trying to catch him at Old Trafford. It was a game which I think United won, and he just couldn't get anywhere near him. And I thought, wow, this is blowing my mind. But yeah, I played with Craig, he was exceptionally fast indeed.
So even when he was in his slightly younger days, when he might even have been faster, I don't know if he was, when he was at Coventry, we played them at Highfield Road, back in the day when Coventry won the Premier League, and I got caught. I was marking the edge of the... I was on the edge of the box for one of our attacking corners, and it got headed out down the left-hand side, and somehow I got caught one-on-one with him, and he looked at me, and like he obviously knew I was a little bit more experienced and certainly not as quick. He looked at me and knocked it 20 yards past me on the left-hand channel over by the dugouts and just sprinted. And I was like the same thing as Nadim. I was running in my arms. I couldn't do any more. And by the time I got to where Bellamy was and he'd put a cross in, I had already signalled to the bench that my hamstring had gone. I completely obliterated my hamstring. He's just so quick.
He should take the blame for that.
Should take the blame for it. I mean, he must have been, I'm guessing at the time he was about 22, 23, and I was about 30. And he just looked at me and almost smiled and went, catch me now, laddo.
Oh my God,
he could run. Bellamy could run. And I could, well, to be honest, I wasn't the quickest. I wasn't bad, but I wasn't.
Right, but not this level.
I mean, those are them. That's a different.
That's fair enough.
That's just not fair.
Okay.
It's not fair.
No, it's not fair. And
especially when you're
getting injured trying to catch them. Shaka, what was it like defending a free kick against Beckham? Was he the best at it, in your opinion, or were there others that were more difficult to save?
Beckham was incredible. Probably the best free kick taker I played against, and albeit on the back end of his career, so he wasn't as prolific, was Gianfranco Zola, who I think at his best in Serie A was scoring 1 in 3. Beckham was difficult from around, for,
anywhere in between 25 and 30 yards because he could get it up and down. If it was closer into the box, 20 yards out, he generally didn't go over the wall. He would try to beat you with bend on the keeper's side, so you just had to be careful not to cheat. But you know, as I say, a little further out, he was tough to play against. Zola, anywhere from the edge of the box to 30 yards, he could do whatever the hell he wanted with the ball. He was scary.
I played with a guy that I think was better than both of them. And that's gone some, because I played with Zola and he was terrific. Obviously David Beckham we played against. But there's a guy at Celtic that came to Celtic about a year or so before I left, called Lubomir Moravcik. Anybody who's followed Scottish football or Celtic will know this. He was a Slovakian international and was an unbelievable talent, but somehow he'd ended up at Duisburg in the second division in Germany. I don't know why, broke his leg, but as Celtic fans, the reason I say he was better, because he was so technically gifted that he could take the free kicks and the corners as well with both feet, which none of these other two could do. And I mean this in all sincerity. He could whip free kicks in the top corner, or whip corner kicks in from the right and left side with both the right and the left foot as accurately, as fast and as pacey that you didn't know. Okay, and that's very unusual. So you don't know what.
Right, and you talk about his technique and how he was a very technical player, but did still a player like him have to practice?
And he was a terrific talent, and the Celtic fans will tell you that.
Right.
They still love him there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just he got plucked because Joseph Venglos knew of him, came from the same country. I don't know if he worked. I think he worked at it. I don't remember, but he was just so naturally talented. And I played with the other guys, and again, magnificent. But he could do it with both. It was incredible. When he arrived at training at Celtic, I remember turning to Big Alan Stubbs and Henrik Larsson and all the boys going, how the hell has this guy been at Duisburg in Germany? What the hell has he been doing? Because that's how good he was.
Wow.
It was incredible.
Even if it was for that alone, just the corners and the free kicks, it would have probably been worth it, right?
And you come off the bench.
We love you.
You ask Celtic fans about him, he was incredible.
All right, well, I'll whip around and ask all of you this one. Nadine, what's the most memorable derby you've been a part of?
One for a positive, one for a negative. The positive was in 2009, I think it was, or 2008. It was at Old Trafford. It was to commemorate the Munich disaster. We had like one-off kits and stuff, and it was a day basically where we as City were supposed to just go there and just be rolled over because it was such an emotional day for United. We ended up winning 2-1. It's the first time we won at Old Trafford in decades. So that one was particularly special. But then the other one, unfortunately, just for balance, was losing 5-1 away at Newcastle when I was playing at Sunderland. So yeah, those are probably two of my most memorable derbies for two completely different reasons.
Shaka?
Yeah, the Tyne Derby was something special. My time up in the Northeast. I actually played. I'm trying to remember if I played or if I was on the bench for the when Sunderland got promoted. They didn't allow away fans. They didn't allow Sunderland fans at St James's Park, and they didn't allow any Newcastle fans to go to Sunderland. And that was weird. Let me tell you something. That was For what those games were when they allowed fans in, compared to what they were when there were no away fans, it was an awful environment. And fans, you really got to understand how fans make those games, because when fans are in, even the game took on a totally different kind of animosity to about them, and those were special.
Oh, I'm conflicted a little bit. I was quite lucky. London Derby. Chelsea-Arsenal 3-3, I remember. Played in the Midlands Derby, East Midlands, Forest. Against Forest and against Leicester. I suppose it would come down to England-Scotland.
Right.
Particularly, I mean, I played against England 3 or 4 times, but I think the game at Wembley, when Don Hutchinson scored, has he mentioned that?
No, never.
When we took a Scotland team down to Wembley, won 1-0, and Don scored a great goal at the back post. Or Rangers-Celtic. You know, great 97-98 season when we beat Rangers 2-0 at Celtic Park. That was So yeah, lots of
Memorable ones.
Lots of memorable derbies. The East Midlands, yeah, the East Midlands one against Forest wasn't so memorable. We got beat, but yeah, actually the East Midlands derby is quite a big derby. People don't realise. Well, not outside the East Midlands, it's not.
Right. No, it's interesting when you say it, because I remember, seeing as we've been talking about him today, I interviewed Thierry Henry.
Right.
And we were talking to him about El Clasico.
Right.
And Real Madrid and Barcelona. But all he wanted to talk about on that question was the North London derby. Just saying the intensity in that.
Oh, later. Yeah. Arsenal Tottenham.
Yeah, and obviously, yeah. Obviously, that's more of a derby.
Not now.
Not now. But yeah.
Just certainly.
That's where he took the conversation. So it is interesting when you hear the players talk about
it. Did you go,
it,
don't talk nonsense? Somebody said, don't talk nonsense, a classic.
I wasn't going to say that, no.
Don mentioned that goal that he scored?
Not once. He also didn't mention yesterday that all the amount of games he had to watch, Shaka.
What?
You know, you think, apparently he had to watch every single Europa League game. And how many goals was it, Shaka? 53 goals?
53 goals.
Don watched them all. Don watched all.
Every single kick of every single game.
Well, with the amount of kids he's got and kids on the way, there's no way he can afford that many screens.
But he can afford to be staying up all night.
He's going to have to be selling some of those screens for diapers. Trust me.
Don has got a baby on the way. Another baby on the way. All right, Shaka. Last question.
1, 2, 3, 4. He's going to need two hands soon, isn't he? 7.
The most important question of all. If given a choice, who will you delegate to do your power ranking while you're away on vacation?
I would give it to Don Hutchinson. He does player power rankings, and I think it'll be a seamless transition.
Shaq, I was up. Shaq, there's one job that I was really up for as well.
No, you are not, Greg. You are not.
All right, do Shaka's power rankings or go and join the boys on Football Americas.
I like the boys on Football Americas.
I love the boys on Football Americas.
Yeah, doesn't mean I'll have to. Let me check the small print in my contract.
You can catch Football Americas twice a week on ESPN.
Listen, his power rankings can't be difficult.
Shaka's?
Cut and paste.
But everybody's always complaining about them.
I hear you've got Rangers in this week, Shaq.
All right. Shaka, please, can we challenge Craig to do it next week?
No. As he said, no. Listen to the man. I'm busy.
He just wants to keep his friendship with you.
I'll tell you what, Kay. In a couple of weeks, I may not be available to do the power rankings. We have a couple of weeks to decide.
Are you having another dummy run for your trip to Trinidad and Tobago? Where you can't get on a flight again? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's not meant to be, Shaq.
Once he does get on that flight, let's see who's doing those power rankings.
It's meant to be.
Let's see what everyone's got to do.
That's two attempts you've made to get on a flight to leave the United States, and it's not happened. What's that telling you?
Third time lucky.
Perfect, touché. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for your questions. Be sure to catch us every single day with all the latest on ESPN FC.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.